Hello and welcome to another episode of A Little Ray of Sunshine, Inspirational Stories from Everyday People. Tonight I have as my guest Nancy Bills, and we're neighbors through the mile, if you will, out here in the country. And I appreciate Nancy being here tonight, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know all of what her story is, but I feel like this is going to be a great story with a great message. How do you feel about that, Nancy?
I think it's going to be good. I learned a lot from my stories.
Okay. Well, if you don't mind, I'm just going to turn it over to you, and let's hear your story. Let's hear about you.
Okay. First, I want to say I've heard so many great stories on this podcast. And so after hearing so many and even suggesting people that could be on this podcast, I finally decided I needed to share my own story. So here we go. I grew up in a family of 12 children. So can you guess what state I grew up in?
Utah?
It was Utah. When my parents were married, my dad asked my mom, "How many kids do you want to have?" And my mom responded, "Oh, maybe 4 or 5." And my dad said, "How about having as many kids as the Lord wants you to have?" And that's how I came into existence.
That's a good response from your dad, though, I gotta say.
Yeah, it is. And it's shaped my life, too, in thinking about how many kids I've wanted to have as well. I'm number 11 out of 12, and I'm the youngest girl. And so it's been fun to have so many siblings above me. Life has always been chaos and craziness. After my mom had a really hard labor with number 10, she's like, "I'm done." And my dad's like, "I think there's 2 little boys still up there." So they were pleasantly surprised when they ended up with a girl instead of a boy. So they knew there was still at least one more up there.
Sure.
But I thought I grew up in a normal household. Life was normal for me with having lots of kids, lots of chaos all the time, and there was never a boring moment. My dad was very strict, and my mom made up for my dad's strictness by being super passive. I didn't always like how my dad disciplined us, but I mean, as a kid, who likes being told what to do? But I didn't know it was wrong until much older how he disciplined us. Occasionally, he would hit us to discipline us. In fact, I remember when I was 4 or 5, one time, my 14-year-old brother had been arguing with my dad and came huffing and puffing out of the room and ran out the back door into the woods behind our house. I was scared for my brother's safety and thought he was running away. I wanted my dad to save and protect him, so I told my dad where he was. Seeing the seething rage come across my dad's face as he yanked off the belt around his waist and charged out the door towards my brother terrified me. Hearing my brother cry out in agony at being whipped sent me in sobbing. After he came inside to his room, I apologized to my brother profusely, saying, "I thought Dad would save him, not hurt him. So many times I wanted my dad to save us or help us, but instead it ended up he would just be angry and we'd get in trouble or whatever it was." Mm-hmm. But being occasionally smacked, whipped with a belt, or being spanked on our bare bottom with a wooden bristle brush was how it was back then. Or at least that's, I thought, was normal.
Right.
The memories still bother me and my siblings today. It all came to a head the summer before I turned 9 years old. I was at home with 3 of my siblings when the police came to our door. There were the 4 youngest kids at home, and we were ushered out the door by the policeman with only a small bag of clothes to go with us. My 11-year-old sister and I went in one police car, while my other 2 brothers went in another police car. So we were separated, and that alone was just hard, being separated from my brothers.
Yeah.
We still fought a lot and didn't get along, but it was hard to be separated.
So what was the reason for the police officers there?
So you're going to find out.
Okay, I'm jumping ahead, aren't I?
Yep,
okay.
But you're all right. On the ride to where we were going, the policeman asked my sister a bunch of questions about the age of all my siblings and what my dad did for work and where my mom was. I was scared and quiet as I listened to my sister give all the answers. I was also amazed that she knew all 11 siblings' birthdays and where they were at. When we reached the building, we were sent to a caseworker, who then sent us to be placed in a foster home. "Why am I here?" I thought. "What's going on?" We went with a kind family who had 1 daughter about our age. The parents smoked, and I had a hard time dealing with the smoky smell. But other than that, we were in a safe environment. The hardest moment of being in a foster home was the day my dad called us and told us over the phone that he had abused my 2 older sisters and would be going to a rehabilitation center to help him. My sister and I bawled at being separated from our parents and for all that was going on. A few days later, we were transferred to other homes, friends of my mom's. I was sent to live with a family who had a daughter my age, as well as 2 other children. I was there for 2 months. While the family was loving and caring, I felt out of place and missed my family terribly.
Bet you did.
Yeah, it was really hard. Mm-hmm. When we all finally returned home, it felt different without my dad. My mom had to go to work, and we kids were often left home to fend for ourselves. I had a high school sister who became our second mom and took care of us while my mom was at work. We eventually had to sell our home and move into a smaller home a few streets over. So we were still in the same ward, which was really nice and really hard at the same time because they all knew what was going on. And so did the school I went to. And so I didn't realize that they knew. I just knew that I was being treated differently.
In what ways? Can you recall that?
In like you had the kind neighbors and ward members that were like, what can we do to help? And like they would be nice to us. But then like a lot of the kids were mean. In fact, I remember one time coming home from a bus stop and two of these teenage boys started picking on my brother and like hitting him, punching him. And there was three others of us that were getting off the bus. And I remember jumping on the back of these boys and just, you know, we fought a lot and we struggled a lot at home. But in that moment, I knew that we were together, that we were fighting for the same purpose. And it was as hard as it was that we were picked on or just mean things said to us. We knew we could count on each other.
You bet. So, isn't that a great feeling to know that?
Yeah. And yeah. I was always grateful that my mom brought us up with the gospel because that really helped keep us together. Because had we not, it would have been horrible, like just dealing with all that we did. But we knew we could count on the gospel.
Yeah, the gospel and each other. That's very positive.
Yeah. We ended up having to go to state-mandated therapy, which was awful, and it brought out the worst in me. I started third grade angry and confused by all that was happening. I started beating my legs with a metal toy baton I had. I missed more days of school than I went that year. I would just have therapists that would tell us how we should think and how we should be feeling, and then they would push and push and push us to feel a certain way. And like I remember sitting in therapy sessions where there was all these other kids, like it was group therapy, and they would share their horror stories about being abused. But I wasn't abused. My sisters were, but I wasn't. And right. I had to hear these horror stories and learn about all how abuse happens and all of these things to watch for. And so for me, I felt like I was an innocent child and I hated it. I hated hearing these things because this wasn't me. This isn't what I had to deal with. And so I hated therapy. We finally got a good family therapist after my dad came back in the home that really helped bring us together. But for the most part, I remember running out of therapy sessions and I beat myself because I hated myself. I hated it. And we had one state mandated therapist that I have a brother that's older than me that's pretty shy. And the therapist was like, "You're angry, aren't you? You're angry." And he was like, "No." And he's like, "Yes, you are. You're angry. You need to express your anger." And just really got after him. And we came home that night and he ended up beating up my older sister. And when we came back, my sister was black and blue.
Oh, no.
And we said to the therapist, "What do you think about this? You said he was angry, so he acted out in anger." And they're like, "Good, you're finally starting to show how you feel." Finally, I felt like, yay, my mom did something right. She gathered us all when he said that and said, "We're not doing this anymore. We're not doing this." And so we were able to switch therapy and it got a little better after that.
Did the therapist or therapists ever address your behaviors towards yourself through all of this?
Whenever they did, it was, "Oh, good, you're showing how you feel." The state mandated therapy was awful. So when my mom, once that happened with my brother and we were pulled, that was a group family therapy session. Once we were pulled from state mandated therapy, things got a lot better.
Okay.
Then when she was able to pick her own therapist for our family, that was better. We cut group therapy for me and my siblings, and my sister, she that was abused, was with a therapist who started hitting on her. And like she had already been abused and then she had the therapist hitting on her. Like that just was not a good situation. So once all that got pulled and we ended up with a really good family therapist, his name was Roger Reed. He was great. He pulled our family together. We were able to actually express how we felt and not told how we feel but we had a safe environment to express how we felt and work through the family issues that were around us.
That's important, isn't it? To be able to express what you are feeling and not what they think you should be feeling.
Right.
That's important.
So anytime anyone tells me, you feel this way, don't you? I always cringe because that's what they told us in therapy and I did not like it.
Okay.
So my dad came back when I was in sixth grade. My fourth and fifth grade years were not great. I mean, it got better, but they were not great. But when my dad came in back in the home, there was peace. And my dad went through this rehabilitation center that it just scared him to not want to abuse. It didn't really, I don't know, I would say it didn't cure him, but it just made him too scared because he never wanted to go back there. And so he had a choice to go to jail or go to rehabilitation, and he chose rehabilitation. And I mean, he got a lot of therapy and stuff, but there was one day they made us sit and he had to tell us, I was 11 at the time, and he had to tell us every single detail of how he abused my sisters.
What do you think the point was of that?
For him and not me. If they really thought about me, it was horrifying mm-hmm. what I had to hear and how he abused my sisters. For him, it was that he would be completely open and never want to do that again because he had to tell his own children. So, I mean, this was in the 90s, and I think this rehabilitation program was new. As far as I know, I think it's not going anymore because they found it wasn't as successful as they were hoping. I like the idea that they would try and rehabilitate people rather than just send them to prison and then do their prison sentence and come home. So I do feel like it did help in some ways, but in other ways, it was not very good.
Right.
But when he came back, he was different. He was excommunicated from the church because of what he did. And he said, well, that's okay. I'm excommunicated. I should be. But he said, that's not going to stop me from living the gospel. So he continued reading scriptures and praying and coming to church. And he went to church through rehabilitation when he was in rehab. And then he came home and was able to get rebaptized. And then a year later was able to receive all of his blessings restored to him for the temple. And I realized through this experience, not all people are so lucky, but my dad did truly try to repent and change. And it's been hard for my family to forgive him. Even now, I have my nieces and nephews of my oldest brother found out, and they can't forgive him. Like, they don't want to be with him. They think he's this horrible person. But I'm like, he's not that same person that he was. He is very caring. He still has relapses in anger, and he's still strict in some ways, but he is really trying. And he goes to the temple now almost every day and is, you know, trying to serve the people on the other side of the veil. And he is very giving. And I always could sense that he grew up in he wasn't abused, but he grew up in very strict home where he couldn't express himself. It was in the era where it was better to be seen and not heard.
Right.
And so I think he struggled with a lot of issues and feeling love. And that's no excuse at all for that's abuse. Right. But understanding where someone comes from helps you to be more empathetic. Again, you never allow that. I know with all the therapy and everything that I went through as a child, I was always afraid as a parent. I do not want to be like my dad. In fact, I was like, I'm never going to be like my dad. And I was like, I'm determined not to marry anyone like my dad. And I feel like I ended up marrying someone like my mom and became my dad.
Oh, no.
And so I've had to work very hard on, you know, I think most people realize when they're strict, you know, I'm never going to be like my parents. And then you find, oh, I really am actually kind of like them. And so in some ways, it's a good thing. And in some ways, it's a bad thing. And I remember one time just being like, telling my husband, well, it's just because this is how I was raised. And he's like, but you're not your parents. You're you. And you have a choice to learn from it and move on, or to stick with it and carry that on to our children. And I didn't want to do that. And so I have worked very hard over the years to overcome being strict and just those tendencies of feeling like I need that control.
Right. I mean, let's face it, we all grow up in homes where we adopt certain patterns that we, you know, that we were being exposed to most of our lives. But your husband's absolutely right. You can take the ones that you like and continue on in that you know, format or pattern. And you can leave to the side the ones that you don't want. And it is our choice. I love that he said that to you.
Yeah, it's been a really life changer for me. And
right.
Just knowing that no matter what my dad did, even if he continued to abuse me, reading was always my escape. And one book I read was A Boy Called It.
Yeah, and I've read that
book. Anyone too. Who takes a psychology class, I think, is almost required to read it. And the thing that hit me there that helped me understand forgiveness is even if that person never changes, it's up to you to forgive. I mean, I'm grateful that my dad made a change. And so my mom was always easy to forgive and forget. She was told to divorce him, or she was told by bishops and stake presidents, it's okay if you want to divorce him, you have every reason. But she really felt strong in the marriage covenant and that he would change, that he would make a change. And he did. She said if he ever abused again, she would stay married to him, but she would take all the kids out of the home and she would leave that environment. Mm-hmm. And so I was glad to know that she had struggles of her own too that she had to overcome, and like we all do.
Right.
But so there were some issues going on in both areas. And so I am grateful for what I have learned and know that we can change and we can be forgiven. And whether a person chooses to make the change or not, it's up to us to forgive. And in relation to the gospel, if we don't forgive them, we're denying them the power of the atonement in their lives.
Yeah, and I feel like in the book you mentioned, A Child Called It, David Pelser was the boy. Obviously, he lived in a different time when what happened in the home and the four walls stayed in the home. Mm-hmm. And so his journey was a tough one. It was a tough one. And not comparing journeys, but whatever journey we're on in whatever time period we're living in today's world, that's open and discussed. That's brought out. Children talk, and you know it needs to be that way.
Yeah.
So I if anybody does ever want to read that book, it was a hard read for me.
Oh, it's pretty intense.
It took me quite a while to finish.
I like the second book that he wrote after. I can't remember what it's called, but he talks about forgiving both his parents, and that was just so powerful. Even though I don't think his mom ever changed, I think she ended up when he was pulled out of the home, she ended up doing the same thing to other siblings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, like, that's hard. It's hard not to forgive someone. Like, you don't want to forgive them if they're not going to change.
Right.
And I think that's harder. But realizing that it's just holding you back.
Yeah, that's right.
Another book I read was Elizabeth Smart. And when she came home from her horrible experience, her mom said, do we need to get you into therapy? And she's like, I don't think so. And she said, it was something to the effect of, don't let him harm another day of your life by dwelling on it and thinking about it. And so for her, she didn't need it because she knew that she could carry on and she's doing great things now. And it's neat, like these podcasts, it's neat to see that people can go on after hard times.
It sounds like that you've been able somehow to move forward and give that forgiveness to your father. How have you been able to work through that?
You know, they say that once you hit about 35, a lot of things from your past will hit you again. And I think that's because, especially if you have children, they're at that stage where you were when it happened. You're seeing things. I'm sure things trigger. And for my family, they've had triggers at various times, and I have. But it's just learning to be open and talk it out. I know for a while I had triggers. And I went to therapy and I'm like, I'll try therapy again, but it just didn't work for me. Mm-hmm. But my husband said, I'll be your therapist. And we would have moments. I'm like, okay, but you can't be you. You have to be my therapist. And he would put himself aside and we could talk about anything. And so he'd be like, I'm being the therapist right now. And one time I was talking to him about having more kids that I really wanted more. I'm like, and my husband doesn't. And he was really good about putting his thoughts and himself aside and thinking as a therapist would and giving me good, solid feedback. And that doesn't work for everyone. I was really grateful to have a husband who really does listen and helps me. He's a police officer, and you've had him on the podcast before. But he doesn't get emotional. That's good and bad. But it really helps because he can see things clearly and be able to help me. And so whenever I've had issues, especially in regards to my past, I've been able to talk it through with him. And then he helps me know how I can move on.
Oh, that's great. So your message then is one of, well, I can see a couple of patterns coming along here. One is we all go through things, and you know, that's just a given. But the other is how we choose to deal with it, and if we decide to forgive or not. And I can tell you from experience, forgiveness is going to be the best for everybody, including the person who does the forgiving.
Yes.
So has it been that way for you,
yes,
Nancy?
And I guess another thought that just came to me now is our past doesn't have to define us.
No, it doesn't.
We choose, you know, no matter what experiences. Some people who grew up in great homes end up with horrible lives. And some people who have horrible homes make the choice and grow up and have wonderful lives.
Exactly.
And so it's really up to us how we take any circumstance and choose to move on with it.
Yeah, that's really what it boils down to. At the end of the day, it is up to us to make those changes.
And that's why forgiveness is important, mm-hmm. is because if we can forgive, it's so much easier to move on than holding a grudge. And I mean, you hear so many times of people in the world today and revenge. And, you know, they've got to get the payback and then they'll be happy.
Yeah.
But the true happiness comes when we can forgive and let go and move on.
Yeah, that's a great message, Nancy, to forgive, let go, and move on.
It's easier said than done.
I was just going to say that. It flows off of our lips very easily. But when we're put in situations sometimes where we're actually the one that needs to do the forgiving, yeah, it's a little harder.
Well, and sometimes.
But doable.
It's doable. And there are times where I still have to forgive my parents. Sometimes mm-hmm. I blame my mom. Why did you let this happen? My sisters blame my mom. Why did you let this happen? We told you this was happening. There was a lot of abuse going on in our home. My brothers ended up abusing these same two sisters. And it just was not a good environment. And so we've all had to learn in our own way how to forgive and realize that there is a power in change. And whether they've truly changed or not, it's still up to us to forgive and allow that atonement to move on. And that may not be something that you can happen in this life, but you can keep trying and keep praying for that to happen. And it can happen.
Yeah, I believe that. I really, truly believe that. So I did kind of want to ask a couple questions. You yourself now have a big family. How many children do you have?
I told everyone if I could be half what my mom was, I would be good. And so I did. I have six kids.
Six kids. Okay. And a moment ago, you talked about how you didn't want to be like your parent and you were trying so hard. What's the hardest part for you with your own children in raising them?
I remember the first time when my daughter was two and I spanked her. Mm-hmm. And I felt horrible and just cried because I didn't want to be my dad, but I didn't know what else to do. I hadn't had any other teaching. And so at that point, I started reading parenting books to help me. Mm-hmm. But there were various times. There was one other time where I should have been called on CPS because I picked up my son and I shook him and I said, "You stop doing this. You stop." And I just shook him and I saw the look in his eyes like an abused child. I didn't hit him. I just shook him really bad. And he was like five. And I told my husband when he got home and I said, "I'm sorry. I feel horrible." Like I was really sorry. I was actually like terrified because I knew I was out of control. It was out of control anger. And a few days later, I said, "Why didn't you call CPS on me?" And he's like, "I knew you were sorry and that this isn't going to happen again, that mm-hmm. you are going to make a change." And I did. I never, ever did anything like that again because I mean, I was horrified. And again, reading parenting books, I just keep reading them to make sure that I can be that good parent and there for my children. And so that's helped me throughout the years. And
anything I know about parenting books, and correct me if I'm wrong, but parenting books don't shame us. They teach us. They give us ways to improve and mm-hmm. change our behaviors. And it's not to shame us and say, "You're a bad person because you lost control." And I bet if we did a study of, let's say, 1,000 parents, I think we'd be shocked at how many people could say at least one time, "I lost control of my child." And hopefully for most of us, that one time fixes it. It's like, "Oh, yeah, nah, never again." But unfortunately, I feel like there are some parents that they don't know anything else, and that's just kind of their what they do to parent their children. And that's sad, you know, obviously.
Well, it's hard if they don't know anything, but knowing that you can make the change, that you don't have to be that person. Mm-hmm. That's why when I came, I wanted to talk about the power of forgiveness and the power of change, that you can change and you can forgive even yourself.
Yeah.
If you can't forgive yourself, it is hard to move on for yourself.
Mm-hmm. What do you think comes first, if there is an order, forgiving yourself or forgiving the other person?
I think if you can't forgive yourself, then it's hard to forgive others because you're holding that back.
And it's part of the plan to maybe see within yourself what you need to do and understand the power of forgiveness and then use that with other people.
Yeah. Though I know that there's some people that can forgive others easy. It's just you're harder on yourself than you are on other people.
I think so. I think that's kind of human nature, right?
Yeah.
That we do that. Okay. Well, if you had any last advice at all, because you listen to my podcast and you know I like to ask for last thoughts, last bits of wisdom from Nancy Bills that you could share because of your experience.
I don't have the perfect family or the perfect marriage, but we are really happy right now. And that's come through living the gospel. And out of all 12 children, all of us stayed in the gospel. And so despite the fact that all this horror happened, I just know that living the gospel brings the most happiness in life.
Absolutely. Well said. Well, I'd like to thank you personally for taking the time out of your night to come over and share your story. We were talking before we turned on the record button here, and you made a comment that you have listened to several podcasts and that you have come to realize too, as I always say, that everybody has a story. And everybody's stories are different. So your story is different from my story, but they're ours and they're personal to us. And that's why I appreciate so much when people are willing to share theirs.
Yes.
So thank you very much, Nancy. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
You bet. And to my listeners, remember to speak up, speak out, and speak often. Bye-bye.